Hello, everybody. This is your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter, Dr. Diana Wiley. Good information like a good man is hard to find. Dr. Dudley Danoff is back, and I'm so happy. He is a world-renowned urologist. His book, which used to be called Penis Power, is now... Well, Dr. Danoff, tell us why... Because you've talked about this before on this program, but tell us why you wrote your book and why the title change. It went from Penis Power to...
The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health.
Yes.
And now it's the second edition. So it means it's popular. So it's everything you wanted to know about man's favorite part, but were afraid to ask. And I had the idea a number of years ago to write it, and I thought the title Penis Power was very clever. It was before the internet, really. It was before Howard Stern. And the mainstream press thought that the word penis on the cover of a book, even though it was a legitimate medical book written by Princeton, Yale, Columbia, mainstream urologic surgeon, was a pejorative word. I got enormous...
What a shame.
Yeah, it's naivete. It's our old-fashioned ideas. I mean, just plain silly. But that's what the media demanded. And I rewrote the book, and now it's in its second edition, and it's flying off the shelves like hotcakes.
And I'm not surprised. It's a very... I have both editions, Your Penis Power and The Male Sexual Health. It's such a well-written, organized book. And you do a lot of, including with me in the past, post-New Year's shows and... Just before Valentine's Day. So let's look at this show as kind of a post-Valentine's Day reflection.
That's good. Valentine's Day is for love, and you and I, not necessarily together, but jointly as professionals, are all for love.
All for love.
All for love. So... As we say, the greatest aphrodisiac is not a rhinoceros horn or a goat gonad. The greatest aphrodisiac is love itself, and nothing beats it.
Nothing beats it, and I had the pleasure several years ago of meeting your beautiful wife and you in person at a conference, and... Your wife is very accomplished in her own right, and you have been married for 40, what, how many years have you been married?
I think it's 47. Yeah, my wife has a very a career which has gone on successfully for more than 50 years. And, you know, as we speak at this moment, my wife is an Israeli performer, a very well-known singer. And as we speak, she is on the airplane to our hometown of Tel Aviv, where she'll be doing a couple of live concerts and a couple of recordings and some television work and radio interviews. And she's been doing that for 50 years. So if you're in Tel Aviv today and you went to a supermarket or a mall or a discotheque, you would actually hear them playing her music all day long, everywhere. It's quite remarkable, and she's a nice wife too.
Oh, of course. What is her name? Her professional name?
It's Hedva, Hedva Amrani, Amrani. And if your listeners wanted to go on YouTube or Google it, they'll be quite surprised. She's really a phenomenon.
Yes, and she's a good wife, too, as you are a good husband. You model so much of what you talk about in terms of healthy sexuality.
Oh, yeah, and, absolutely. You know, the other night, I was interestingly, I was watching the Grammys, which I thought was a very enjoyable show, And towards the end of the show, they had a salute to Deanna Ross. And
yes.
There she was in a glowing red gown, introduced by her 9-year-old grandson and celebrating her 75th birthday. And there she was, no less a diva than she was, you know, 50 years ago. And my wife is just 75 and looks a lot like Deanna Ross, lean and mean, fighting machine with an unbelievable voice. I mean, it was like a deja vu. So if you work at it, it can happen.
Yes, it can. And you have influenced so much, so many men mainly. And, yeah, you only see men because
I'm a mainstream urologist, so although men have prostates and women don't, women have kidneys and bladders and stones and kidney tumors and bladder tumors and urinary incontinence and urinary infection. So we do see quite a few patients. We do see more men than women, but we certainly see lots of women with urologic problems. And as a matter of fact, in my book, I have a whole chapter designated just for women. I mean, I want the women to know all about the man in their life's favorite part. What makes it work? Why does it work? When does it work? How does it work? I want every woman out there to be a penis expert.
And then the sexual life that they have works better.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Give the man what he wants, and ye shall benefit.
Yes, and you have talked about how there's a very powerful connection between how men perceive their penises and how they perceive themselves. Expand on that a little bit, because it's so true.
Well, it's about the power of positive thinking as applied to that favorite part in a man. Now, Lord, when you were born, the Lord endowed you with some equipment. And there is no way that you can make it larger or fatter or longer. You can make it a little bit firmer, and you could be a little bit nicer guy about it. So when you look down and you see that favorite part of a man, you have to love it. You have to cleanse it. You have to pamper it. You have to powder it. And it is as reliable as you think it is. And once you have any self-doubt, it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you're having difficulty erections and begin to say, oh, my God, I'm not a man, I mean, that's psychological, it's like a buzzsaw, will just be a self-fulfilling prophecy. So it's all about the man you are. It's all about the power of positive thinking. It's all about making the best with the equipment that you have. And all men have temporary failures, and we have to be able to laugh about it and get over it. I mean, that's not to denigrate the need for every man over 40 to get a urologic check, and if he does have erectile dysfunction, to seek medical care. Oftentimes, ED is the first sign of some serious underlying cardiovascular disease, or perhaps diabetes, or coronary artery disease, or perhaps hypertension, and the first manifestation will be in erectile dysfunction, and it's often the urologist who makes the diagnosis. My God, you better go see your cardiologist. You better get your diabetes attended to. You better get your blood pressure under control. So it's not to be taken lightly.
No, of course not. And I remember back in April of 1998 when Viagra was first FDA approved, there were a number of so-called Viagra divorces. But first, the point I wanted to make before that was that it got a lot of men in their attempt to get this amazing new drug. It got a lot of men in to see their doctors, and heart disease was a big symptom, and it was discovered. So,
as a matter of fact, it's interesting you should mention that in the early days of Viagra, it sort of got a bad name because physiologically, at the end of the way Viagra works, a vasodilator, it in, it expands the blood vessels, so it increases blood flow. So here's a sort of an older man, and he's having sex like he hasn't had in years because he's able to get an erection firm enough to penetrate, and he gets crushing chest pain during the act, and the paramedics rush in, and the first thing they do is they give him a nitroglycerin because they want to expand his coronary arteries to give more oxygen to the heart muscle, and the guy dies of hypotension, I mean low blood pressure. So now the paramedics are all trained to know a man has a heart attack during intercourse. The first thing they ask him, did you take a Viagra or a Cialis or a Levitra? I mean, all the PDE5 inhibitors. And by all means, we're not going to give you nitroglycerin. So it got a bad rap because people said, oh, yeah, Viagra causes a heart attack. Well, it really doesn't. But if you
You know, I was thinking of the movie that came out about 10 years ago, Something's Gotta Give, with Diane Keaton, and there was a scene, and Jack...
Lemon?
I'm blanking on his last name, but anyway, he was taking Viagra, and he kept getting these heart attacks, and that was shown in the Jack Nicholson, that was shown in the movie where the doctor is saying, have you recently taken a Viagra? And he's sort of embarrassed because his lady love is there, and he said, yes.
He said yes.
So
yeah, well, you
those
know,
questions
it's very
are important.
Interesting from just the historical, a little historical sidelight. When Viagra was first introduced, it was put out there by Eli Lilly, and it was promoted as a vasodilator for the heart. So they were looking for a substitute for nitroglycerin because nitroglycerin had gone generic. So the drug companies were looking. So they noticed that it wasn't a very good heart vasodilator. So they ended the study, and they told all the men in the study, "Okay, give back the samples." And the men said, "Heck no, we're not giving back the samples. This is like a magic medicine for erections." So it was a serendipitous discovery of Viagra as an ED drug when it was really meant to be a coronary vasodilator. Sort of interesting.
It is interesting. There was an article all about that in Playboy magazine several years ago, and sort of a history of Viagra and all the attempts. And so it is interesting, and it's now it's considered
it's a billion dollar drug.
A very safe drug.
Very, very, very safe. As long as you understand that if you have coronary artery disease and you're taking nitroglycerin, you can't use those drugs. The interesting drug was following the introduction of Viagra, Cialis came out. So it's the same class of drug with a slightly different chemical sidearm. So it has what we call a longer half-life. It lasts longer per dose. So they were trying to advertise it on television, and because it had a longer half-life than Cialis, the FDA demanded that the Cialis advertisement put the tagline in, if your erection lasts longer than 4 hours, call your doctors. Well, I mean, the drug company was furious. They said, oh, no, we don't want to put that in because it's going to scare everybody away. Well, FDA insisted, and you know what happened after that. It became the most famous tagline in all of advertising history. If your erection lasts more than 4 hours, call your doctor. And then every man said, oh, my gosh, if my erection lasts longer than 4 hours, I'm going to call everybody I know.
And everybody knows.
And so it became a very famous tagline, and it was, again, one of those serendipitous good. So Cialis is by far the best-selling of all of the PDE5 inhibitors.
And, yes, I'm not surprised. And I know it was first approved in Europe, and as a lot of drugs are, and then it came around here. But the low dose that men take every day for their penis health, talk a little bit about low-dose Cialis.
Yeah. So first of all, the low dose is 5 milligrams per day. The dose on demand is 20 milligrams. So a couple of years ago, the FDA approved the low-dose Cialis, that is 5 milligrams per day, for benign prostatic hyperplasia, which is the benign enlargement of the prostate that affects almost all aging men. So it sort of got the double whammy. It was good for reducing obstructive prostatic symptoms. And secondly, it was great for increasing blood flow. So that gave a tremendous boost. So almost all of my older patients, who I can encourage to do so, I have them on 5 milligrams of Cialis daily. And I always tell them, if you think you're going to get lucky once or twice a week, you could take an extra 5 or even an extra 10 as a little boost. And it really works very well. But it is approved by the FDA for BPH, for benign enlargement of the prostate.
Yes. So let's go on and talk a little bit more, because you speak about this extremely well and knowledgeably, and how sex is healthy. Sex is healthy for your body, and we've already discussed some of that, but let's go on and talk a little bit more about it. Like, I mean, we've already said it improves heart health. What about lower risk of cancer?
I would love to say that that's the case, but I don't think there's any documented evidence.
No, okay.
A lot of sex, you're going to protect your prostate. But look, sex is one of life's greatest pleasures. And not only is it a way to express love, but it has tremendous health benefits. It's a tranquilizer. It's good for cardiovascular fitness. It takes upper body strength. It takes lower body strength. It takes somebody that's in good general health. So if you're fit, I mean, health-wise, you're going to be a better lover. You're going to get more pleasure out of it. So fitness, general health, diet, exercise, cardiovascular program, all important for good sex.
Absolutely. And because sex does help maintain a slimmer physique, and it can even improve weight loss. There was a study of healthy German adults that revealed that men and women who had sex more frequently tended to be slimmer than folks who didn't have as much sex. And I guess that's because sex burns 50 to 60 calories per encounter, unless you're having quite active sex, and then it might be a little more than 50 or 60 calories per encounter. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of reasons that I think slender people may have more sex. I mean, I would say...
Good.
Yeah, hi, Deanna. I'm on a landline. I don't know why
We lost
happened.
Our connection. So we were talking about how you were saying that slimmer people often have better sex, and so expand on that, and hopefully we won't lose the connection again.
I'm on a landline. I hope we won't. I was saying that if a man has what we call the Dunlap syndrome, where his belly Dunlap over his belt, and he has seeing his penis, or if he takes a shower and doesn't get his testicles wet because of a protuberant abdomen, I think that means unattractiveness. And, anatomically, the penis comes out from under the undersurface of the symphysis pubic, the pubic bone, which is the bone right in front of the pelvis. So if a man has 3 or 4 inches of prepubic fat, the penis has to traverse all of that fat before it sees the light of day, and on it gives the appearance of a very short penis. And, what fun is that?
Yeah. And then the slimmer person is going to be healthier with more, perhaps, stamina. And stamina often decreases, and some adjustments have to be made as a person ages. But they have a better chance if they're healthy.
I mean, as we age, I maintain that if you're strong enough to get out of bed in the morning and brush your teeth, you're strong enough to have sex. Now, you can't run as fast or jump as high or run as long a distance, but it could be no less satisfactory in old age as it was in the younger ages. So someone once told me for the older person, it takes me longer. It takes me all night long to do what I used to do all night long. But it can be no less
indeed
satisfactory. So
right, it can still be. And then there are all of the pluses of just lying naked together with your partner and get the oxytocin flowing.
Love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
I do too. So in your public relations letter from Javier, your man, you said that you talked about superfoods to invigorate your sex life, and you and I haven't talked much about that in past shows. I know about superfoods, but I'd love to hear what you have to say about superfoods.
Well, you know, unlike what was widely publicized out there, there is no, you know, magic pill that, you know, one superfood, you have some kale grown in some forest in France. So there isn't a one food that stands out. But certainly when looking at diet, the things that are super and the things that are bad are readily quantified and qualified. So number one, we got to keep our arteries lean and mean and open. So we have to be low cholesterol diet, low fat diet, high protein diet. Maybe the most ideal of the proteins would be tofu. So if you were on a pure tofu diet, as some of my patients are, sometimes they call it the prostate cancer diet. Maybe the most ideal food, low carbs. So as a general rule, low fat, keep your cholesterol down, low lipids, low carbs, a lot of vegetable fiber, fruits and fresh fruit, fish, lean poultry. So those are the are what I call the superfoods.
And it makes so much sense. What you put in your body affects everything.
Absolutely.
Can affect your mood as well as your physical abilities.
Absolutely. You definitely are what you eat. And McDonald's is not the friend of the porno industry.
No. Not at all. You also talk about five healthy sex habits, and this is a good reflection, not just after Valentine's Day, but any time. And I know in the past you've talked about, and I know as a therapist who sees lots of couples and marriage counseling and so on, keep boredom out of the bedroom. Keep boredom out. Let's talk about that.
Well, there's no question boredom, but you know, I sort of have these five healthy sex habits for men. I'm recommending them for 219, but I'm also recommending them for 220 and in times past. So, definitely, I would say have sex as frequently and as emotionally as you're able. There's not a limited number of orgasms or erections or ejaculations. I mean, it's just limitless. So the more sex you have, the more physical you are, I think the more emotionally stable you will be, the happier sex life. So don't, your penis is a tough cookie. Probably the most sensitive part of it is the skin, but you just can't have enough sex. So I also think to have a healthy sex life for a man, you have to have a healthy prostate. So you should have, if you're over 40, your annual PSA, which is prostate-specific antigen. It's a screening blood test for prostate cancer, which makes it possible for us to make that diagnosis at a very early stage, which is curable. So a man should have his prostate checked every year. It's a simple exam. And I always emphasize a woman would hardly ever miss a year where she didn't get her pap smear and her mammogram. But it's tough to get our men in to get their prostate checked. We all are macho. We think we're indestructible. We want to, you know, catch the pass in the closing seconds of the Super Bowl. So I think the ladies out there, get your men in to get their annual prostate checked. And while they're there, they should have their testosterone checked. And if they are deficient in testosterone, the so-called grumpy old man syndrome, where they're getting a little paunchy around the middle and they're losing some muscle mass and they're kind of grumpy all the time, it may be that they have a low testosterone. We call it andropause. And it's very, very safe to give testosterone replacement therapy. We call that TRT, as long as we monitor the serum testosterone. So that's very important. I think one other factor which is often overlooked, if you're beyond the childbearing years and you're not interested in having more children, consider a vasectomy. It's done as an outpatient in the office. It takes a couple of minutes to do it under local anesthesia. It doesn't affect the erections in any way. It doesn't affect the volume of ejaculate in any way. And it certainly will make you think, you know, pregnancy is off the table. You can be more uninhibited. And last but not least are those reliable pills we talked about. When all else fails, you know, go to the Cialis, the Viagra. They are drugs of performance. They are not drugs of desire. But they're out there, and they're safe to use, and I highly recommend it. So, and briefly, those are my five big tips for 2019.
And they're very good. Let's talk. Let's circle back and talk about testosterone. And some guys, or I've heard and read that if there's any indication of prostate cancer growing, the urologist may hesitate to give the man testosterone replacement. Talk about that.
Yeah, because there's a little bit of a misunderstanding. So testosterone itself does not cause prostate cancer, and giving exogenous testosterone for somebody who is what we call hypogonadal, meaning has a low circulating serum testosterone, does not cause prostate cancer. But if that patient has a focal or unrecognized prostate cancer, giving testosterone is like a fertilizer. It's like throwing cow manure on a wheat stalk. It will just make it grow and explode. So you have to be very careful that we screen for prostate cancer if we're considering testosterone replacement therapy. And the second thing that's important about it is testosterone cannot be taken by mouth because it's very toxic to the liver. So it has to be given by either injection or by a cream or gel with what we call transdermal across-the-skin absorption. And the blood level, what testosterone does, if you have too much of it, it thickens the blood. It increases the circulating red blood cells. And it makes it much more likely that you can get a block in the coronary artery or get a stroke. And if you're a young person and you're, quote, juicing, meaning you're taking steroids to build up big biceps, it will also shrink your testicles. Because what happens is if you are getting exogenous testosterone and elevating your serum testosterone to a very high level, there's a pituitary mechanism that signals the testicle. Look, we're getting the testosterone elsewhere. The testicles, we don't have to work so hard, so they begin to shrink. So I've seen these bodybuilders, you know, with huge massive muscles and the testicles of a 9-year-old. So it's a great drug. If you're deficient, it needs to be monitored very, very carefully, and there are risks involved in using it.
That's very important information for people to hear. And maybe that's a pretty good segue, and we haven't talked about this before in the past, Dr. D, but you have suggestions for top questions every gay man should be asking his doctor but isn't. What are some of those? How gay men should be paying attention? So let's we'll talk about that.
Well, I talk about gay men in my book a lot. I talk a lot about not so much husband and wife between heterosexuals, but I talk a lot about partners because the same principles that apply to a heterosexual male or a bisexual male apply to the gay male. But I have my ideas are as liberal as you can be, and I think what goes on behind closed doors between two consenting adults, everything is on the table.
Yes.
There are no holds barred. HOLDS. Unlike professional wrestling. the one thing you have to emphasize in the gay community is safe sex.
Yes.
And obviously the gay community. I mean, all couples should, gay, straight, bi, should practice safe sex. But obviously, it becomes a much larger issue in the gay community. So, gay men for me are the same as straight men or bi men, and I just always emphasize that the safe sex. I mean, we could cure just about every STD out there. But HIV/AIDS is, still problematic. I mean, we're getting closer to the solution, but it's still problematic. We're getting strains of gonorrhea, of GC. I mean, it used to be that somebody got GC, you took the penicillin, you just waved it in the room, and the GC disappeared. We're seeing more drug-resistant strains of GC, so that it's becoming much, much more difficult to treat. Of course, chlamydia is out there, and it's a real risk to the female partner in terms of cervical cancer. So practice safe sex. I think that's the key message.
And have more conversations. A lot of couples really struggle to communicate. Here they're thinking about being sexually intimate, and they can't seem to talk about it very well. And that's one reason that the kink community, K-I-N-K, often have better sex because they've talked about it. There are rules and communication and what's going to go on. So that's pretty important to have that kind of good, honest communication.
Yeah, well, I mean, it almost goes back to the Bible. Do unto others as you will have others do unto you. But in order for others to do unto you, you have to let your partner know what it is that you want. What do you find pleasurable? What do you find annoying? What do you find painful? What do you find, not to your liking? And I think a loving partner will always try their very, very best, or his very best, or her very best, to try to please the partner. Because, and we talk about this a lot, and I think we've broached this subject before. I mean, give and thy shall receive. The more you give, the more you will get. So it's not just that you're out to please someone else, but you're out to please someone else with the expectation that they will return the favor. So, I mean, that's just the way the world works. It works in the business world. It works in families, and it works in the bedroom.
It really does. You know, Dr. D, I think since we last spoke, I got married to Brian.
Wow.
And that was mid-March, so we're coming up on a year.
Wow.
And Brian and I, after 8.5 years together, almost a year married, we still, here we are in our 70s and just having such hot sex. But here's what Brian says that I love. He says, worship your woman and the goddess will reward you. He is so thoughtful and pays attention and gets in sync and all of the things that a good lover should do. But he's really interested in my pleasure, and I feel like I'm a very fortunate woman because of that.
Well, but Deanna, I although I don't know Brian intimately, I can tell you that he's spending his emotion wisely, because I'm sure 100% that you return the favor.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
There you go. So, you know, that's the way it works.
Yeah. We had snow up here, I understand, in Seattle. And snow like we had is very unusual. Like, we don't have it very often. And I hear that down in L.A. you're getting a lot of rain, which you need, but
right.
It's causing some problems, too. Anyway, poor Brian slipped on the ice and hurt his knee badly. So he's now wearing he had surgery and wearing a leg brace, but it won't keep him down for long.
No.
I'm a supportive partner because he's healthy. And that even he's healthy. Even the surgeon said when he cut in to, because it's a quadriceps tendon kind of injury, that his tendon was so in such good shape. The surgeon said that sometimes when he does knee surgeries, the tendon is kind of mushy because the guy hasn't been exercising. And so another plus for staying fit, right? You might, if you injure some part of your body, it's going to be better when you have surgery.
And it also, if you're lean and mean, it makes the surgeon's job easier. The anatomic features are more readily identified. You don't have to cut through a mountain of fat and blubber to get to where you're going. I mean, there are so many reasons why good health, good diet, an exercise program is essential for every part of life. You know, we see now patients living longer than ever before. And what good is it to live to be a ripe old age if you're infirm and frizzled up and inactive? And I see patients today who are 100, they walk erect without a walker, they're mentally alert, they're enjoying every facet of life, their family, their grandchildren. And I see people in their 70s and 80s, you know, who look like they're, one foot on a banana peel and the other foot on a slippery slope. So,
yeah,
it's about the power of positive thinking, not only to the male's favorite part, but to your body in general. You got to look in the mirror and really recognize what you see. Don't be blind and don't ignore what you see. Improve it.
And prove it. And really be very proactive so that you can maintain quality of life as you age. And and that is not only, of course, we know this, but that's not only the physiological part, but it's your attitude. And you talk a lot about attitude and staying positive. And, you want to expand on that a little bit?
We
already talked a little bit about it because we said there's a powerful connection existing between how men perceive their penises and how they perceive themselves, but also the attitude.
Yeah, well, my whole gestalt is about attitude, upbeat attitude. You know, anger is, you got to keep anger out of the bedroom. You have to keep stress out of the bedroom. Anger for me is a non-productive emotion. It doesn't get anybody anywhere. You can't place blame. You got to get your act together. You know, you're as good as you think you are. Your penis is as reliable as you think it is. If you have a failure or a temporary failure, you have to make a joke about it or laugh about it and try to take corrective measures. But no negativity. You got to have negativity. Put it in a box and lock it up and throw the key away.
Yeah.
So I have also, Deanna, I have on my website a lot of good tips. I write a monthly newsletter with all new stuff coming out, and it's called The Ultimate Guide to Men's Health without the Sex. The Ultimate Guide to Men's Health. So there's a lot of good stuff on there, and I encourage your listeners to go to it.
The Ultimate Guide to Men's Health.
Right.
And I know, I was going to mention that because it changed after the book title changed Penis Power to The Ultimate Guide to Men's Health. So, yeah, there's a lot of good information on there, and you keep it updated so that there's new stuff coming along, too.
Always new Always
new. Yes. And you know, you, Dr. D, are aging so well because you've stayed engaged in life, and you're working, and you're helping people, and your work is satisfying, and you're giving back, and you're making a difference in people's lives. All of these things that people that don't stay engaged in life as they age and don't retain curiosity, they don't do as well.
That's very true. I am getting older, and as I've been a urologist for, believe it or not, in practice for 50 years. A couple of things on that. People ask me a lot about when I'm going to retire, and a couple of things about aging. You cannot escape genes. So the first thing I'd like to thank, you know, for getting me here are my mother and dad. They're long gone, but I thank them, because if you get dealt a bad genetic deck of cards, you know, there's not too much that you can do. But assume that you don't. Then, of course, it's about a healthy lifestyle, an exercise program, a proper dietary program, no alcohol in excess, certainly no cigarette smoking. If you want an occasional celebratory cigar, I'm okay with that as long as you don't inhale it. And then what I say to all my patients, if you have something that you do that you love doing, don't retire. Because I see the guys and the gals in my sphere who are vital and much younger than their stated years retire and just fade away. So what you need to do is stay engaged for as long as you can. I mean, until your partners or your patients say, you know, gee, Dr. D, you forgot to zip up your fly, and I think you better find something else to do. But it's not about the money or the income. It's about doing something useful and giving something back. And I think it keeps you young and vital. And I have a lot of young partners that say, gee, Dr. D, please don't quit. Please don't quit. So there you go.
Yes, it does. I have no plans to retire, and I'm the same age as your wife. And it just, I find my work so satisfying, and I get to hear lots of stories and then make interventions that are usually very helpful to the couples that I see.
Right.
And giving you, and you talk about this in terms of reinvigorating your sex life, giving permission to try something new. Well, that's what I do in general. I'm giving permission to my clients, to my patients, to try something new and to reengage, to find that spark and that spice. So
I like it.
Yeah, I know. And you write, I have advised patients to take the afternoon off and surprise their wives with flowers and a sunset tryst in a motel.
There you go.
That's such a good idea.
Well, you know, it is a good idea, but the reality is so few of us do that. You know, my wife or my husband is going to think it's silly, or my partner is going to think it's silly. Well, if you put it in the right frame and you give it the right spin, it's not silly at all. It's just a darn good idea.
Well, it is. And then I think that if people make love in new places, then they stimulate the production of dopamine, the hormone of arousal, which needs novelty. So making love in a new place can be very exciting. You point out in your writing that oftentimes honeymoons are in warm climates, and there's a reason for that.
Well, because in cold climates, we have what we call vasoconstriction. The peripheral blood vessels narrow because they're trying to preserve body heat. So that's exactly the opposite you want for the sexual organs. You want the vessels to dilate. So that's why people go to Maui on a honeymoon and not the Nome, Alaska, usually.
That's right.
But that there's a physiologic reason for that. I mean, that's why warm weather climates are, quote, more romantic, end quote, than the colder climates.
Sure.
Although I've been to some pretty nice ski resorts and sitting by the fire after a vigorous day skiing and having a couple of brandies. I mean, it doesn't get more romantic than that.
Yes, in front of a fire and warming up. Yeah, that's right.
There you go.
You also say pay attention to your body's rhythms. I think that is very important because fatigue obviously affects sexual energy, but if somebody's really stressed out, it can help, of course, to have sex, but paying attention to the body's rhythms, syncing up with, and that makes a person a good lover, to pay attention to your partner's rhythms and how they're breathing and how they're moving, syncing up.
Well, I think that's a very accurate appraisal. I mean, stress is terrible. I mean, stress is terrible for your blood pressure. It gets your epinephrine flowing, which constricts blood flow. So everything that is counter to having good sex is wrapped up with stress. It's terrible for your cardiovascular system. It's terrible for your mental health. It's terrible for your sexuality. So if there's any way that you can, you know, take stress, I use the so-called compartmentalize, put it in a compartment, put it in a box. I like to use that analogy a lot, the stress box. Close the lid very firmly, lock it with the key and throw the key away. You know, obviously easier said than done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a young daughter who's an extremely successful lawyer, and she has a young child and a very ambitious husband, and she's always under a lot of stress.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, oh, I'm so stressed. And I always say to her, you know, sweetheart, you know, life is stressful. It is the nature of the universe that we live in. It's the nature of the world that we live in. Turn on the 6 o'clock news. I mean, we live in a stressful world, and you just have to learn to compartmentalize stress and not let it interfere with your activities of daily living. So I'm a urologist, a urologic surgeon, who's dealt with, you know, prostate, kidney, and bladder cancer all my life. And here I am, you know, talking about something that's perhaps more in the psychiatric vein, but it so much affects certainly male sexuality. You know, I'm not holding myself out as an expert in female sexuality, but I am a bit of an expert in male sexuality, and stress is a killer.
Yeah, women, and it does affect women, of course, too, because a woman in a sexual relationship needs to feel safe for her to be truly responsive and orgasmic, and she needs to feel kind of protected and understood by her partner, because then she can let go better and release that orgasm. And it's a lot of men think, I'll give the orgasm to my woman, and he participates in it, but he doesn't. She has to be present and let go and then the orgasm will often emerge. But she has to feel safe. And, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no disagreement on this end.
Yes. So, So your new book is, I know, no doubt, in its second edition, so it's selling well, and people can go, they stop us a couple of minutes before the top of the hour, so I'm winding the show down. So the Ultimate Guide to Men's Health, and that's they can read more about book.
The book is The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health.
To male
I'm
sexual health,
at all
not
of
men.
Booksellers, and the website is The Ultimate Guide to Men's Health. And I'm here at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, which is a 1,000-bed community teaching hospital and right in the heart of Los Angeles. If any of your listeners, you know, want to call, and if I have the time, I'm more than happy to chat with them. And if they're down in the L.A. area, I'm happy to listen to their story.
Well, that's an amazing offer from somebody who is not just a surgeon or a physician or a urologist, but you're a little bit the psychiatrist, too, and I like that about you, and that's one reason we've done so many shows together.
Well, I mean, look, to be a urologist and do the kind of exam that I have done for more than 50 years, you have to have a little bit of a sense of humor. You have to have a little bit of tongue-in-cheek. You have to have a little of your private philosophy. So it all goes into the package.
Yes. And I think that great sex at its finest, with an emotional, loving connection and with good skills backed by informed knowledge, you know, good skills for both the man and the woman, or in the case of gay partners, the woman and woman and the man and the man, but good skills backed by informed knowledge. You know, a small study was done of sex therapists wondering if they had better sex, and it turns out that we do, because we don't have the anxiety, because we have so much knowledge. Knowledge is pretty important.
I think a wise man said, knowledge is power.
Yes, knowledge is power. It always is. And you've also said, no, you haven't said this, but I've said it, and I'm sure you would agree, that many facts of our lives can't be changed. Your penis is what it is, but you can take care of it.
Yes.
And if you're divorced, you're divorced, but it's never too late to change your sexual story. And with the 2019 here now, take charge of your sexual story and use facts to create something you like instead of a story that leaves you feeling incompetent or incomplete. Because after all, it's your story. It's your story, the sexual story. So make it a better story, right?
I couldn't agree with you more.
Yes. So as we wrap up this, do you want to say just kind of final inspirational thought or summary takeaways for our listening audience?
Well, first of all, it's always a pleasure to talk with you because you're very, very insightful, and you give me a platform to state my case about the power of positive thinking as applied to man's favorite part.
Yeah,
and we have to give and love, and my philosophy is the more you give of yourself, the more you will get back in spades, and that's the way the world works. Anger and stress must go, and I hope that we speak again in the future, Deanne.
We will, Dr. Danoff. Thank you so much for this last hour. Goodbye, everybody.
Se ti perderai nel labirinto di un amaro autore, ma i tuoi piedi intatti.